You are tuned to the dirt.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found.
That's affirmative. He has evidence proving Bigfoot.
The search for the flying saucers.
You're about to explore another world, another universe, with the likes of Guru, Bigfoot, and UFO.
I woke up in the middle of the night. I don't know what it was.
He is overshadowed by the energy from the world teacher, and the world teacher uses him and gives a blessing.
And all of a sudden, I realized that the banging is coming from my kitchen. Instantly, I froze. I was so scared.
They said they heard a disembodied scream, like a bloody scream, like something bad was happening.
And now, here comes your diva of the dark, Lori Schultz.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. I am so excited about this show. I want to thank Chris Singleton for being here with me. He is actually always running everything. He's amazing behind the glass. So thank you, Chris, for being here. And without much longer ado, we've got Brian Crissy and Pamela Meyer Crissy on the air with us today. And what we're going to be talking about are some of their books and also crop circles. This is just going to be an interesting interview tonight, and I'm really looking forward to it. So if I've got my special guests on the air with me, I would love to introduce them right now. Brian, are they both here?
We are here.
Hi. Thank you so much for being on the dirt.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to this interview. And, just everything that you're doing, I was actually listening to a few of Brian's YouTube videos, and just, you guys are just very interesting. This is going to be fun. it's always good to have a great guest. And before we get going, I just wanted to let the listeners know that if you have any questions, are you guys willing to take questions just in case anybody?
Sure.
Yes. No problem.
All right.
We have answers for everything.
Oh, my goodness. This is going to be great. I have so many questions. So the number to call into the dirt is 530-742-5555. And if you'd like to call in, please do. And I also, on Facebook and on my dirt page, I posted some information about you guys, your books, and everything else. So if anybody's curious or has any questions about anything you know or anything you've experienced, feel free to call in. Again, the number is 530-742-5555. So what I'd like you guys to do is if you want to take a minute to introduce yourselves and explain to the listeners what it is that we're going to be discussing.
Okay. I'm Brian, and this is
Pam.
And we are your guests. And we each have a long history of being in various places doing various things for a number of years. The short story would be that we met each other in Oregon and set up a publishing company to bring out what we perceived to be our best shot at the truth about things that didn't seem to be coming out. So we did that. We've been doing that for many years. We've put out about 55 books. About two-thirds of those are still in print. And in recent times, we pulled out the second edition of our book, Common Sense in Uncommon Times, Survival in a Changing World, which is intended to address a feeling that a lot of your listeners, I think, have, and that is that something's coming, mm-hmm. and we don't know exactly what it is, but there's some things that we can do to make our lives a little bit easier to get through what may be coming at us.
Well,
in a parallel voice, we also got into crop circles and things like that, and that's a totally different topic, so we'll get to that later.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, for starters, I do have basically kind of a little scripture, different things I want to follow through with in order to, you guys know where to target your questions and everything to get the most out of informing people about your book. When did your book first come out, The Common Sense in Uncommon Times? When was it released?
The first edition came out in 2002, right after 9/11 occurred.
Okay.
And it was geared more towards the terrorism. This one is more about weather and also about any crazy thing that might happen. But as we were finishing the second edition, as we were writing the second edition, and as we were trying to finish the second edition, it was one disaster after another. Every day there seems to be a disaster of the day.
Right.
And that's so different than, you know, 10 years ago. I keep saying to Brian, you know, remember when we used to watch the news and the weather was at the end and it wasn't a disaster happening? So this covers, if any, you know, doesn't matter if it's a kid in Boston or, you know, kids running through the airport or a man running through the airport, you know, a terrorist with somebody with a gun is a terrorist, so it doesn't have to be Al-Qaeda. So it's just the strange times we live in, and it's strange times, you know, for our long-term survival, too. So we stretched this book to be about long-term survival and to deal with our medical system and the food that's becoming more and more fake and not keeping us healthy and things like that. So it expanded itself on this second edition.
I think that's great because, you know, there, like you were mentioning, just the changes, the weather, all the different things that are taking place. I remember when the biggest news would be, oh, some kid threw a rock through somebody's window or something. Like,
right.
The news is so huge right now. And it, for me, it's been concerning when, you know, they've got all these fish floating up, and I mean not just fish, but whales or dolphins, and they're all getting beached, and it barely makes the news. You're like, does anybody else notice that there's like huge things taking place? And it's just like right. Some of the news stations aren't even covering it. You're like, that's big news. I mean, if these fish are all coming ashore, what does that say for us? What's going on? What's happening with our environment? Are we safe? Can we get safe? You know, so, I mean, there's some questions like people who are paying attention and other people, I don't know how they can just ignore what's going on, but I'm not one of them. So
they just don't want to see. So many people just don't want to see.
I think a lot of people are like that because the consequence of actually caring is tremendous. If you care about the future and this world and so on, and you open yourself to the observations as to what is happening on this planet, it is a terrifying thing. And it's much easier just to close your eyes and turn on TV and watch sitcoms and do the things the way you used to do it. And a lot of people are there because they don't have the internal strength really to take on any kind of a responsiveness to what is going on in the world. And yet I think people can. I think they can prepare for some of the changes that are coming, and I think we can get to a better world.
And I think sometimes maybe some of those people who maybe are reacting in a way that we would perceive as not caring, maybe it's also that they don't know how to connect to the inner self, and maybe they're just not educated. And that's why books like these and people like you trying to help people to get to this place of realization and enlightenment and everything else, I think is so important just to help those people because maybe they don't realize most of everything that is taking place happens. The changes that we would make would happen within ourselves, each individual being responsible for us.
Right.
Then we wouldn't be in this situation.
Exactly. And I think, ironically, we all could do it easily.
Yes.
If we all set our minds to do it.
Right. I agree.
It is. It's about education.
Okay. So if you don't mind me stepping back from the book for a minute, how did you both end up with the same interest? Like, where did you both start? Where would you think your journey started? I mean, a lot of people say since I was little, like a lot of people who are totally in tune like yourselves, it does start at a very young age. But was there like a pivotal moment or an event, something life-changing that took place, or was it just something, a natural curiosity?
Well, I think your audience is probably weird enough to hear what we're going to say.
you know what? Or should we say normal, right? New normal?
Weird is the new normal. That's right.
That's right. So, bring it.
In our case, each of us in a different place at about the same age went through a close encounter of some kind, which seems to have been, looking back on it, some kind of a alien visitation ship of some kind. Both of us had that experience. We didn't know each other at the time, but many years later when we were kind of coordinated into meeting each other, that was one of the first topics that came up. I mean, everybody talks about that when you meet somebody, right?
Along with religion and politics.
Religion, politics,
exactly.
And UFOs.
Because they're a good way to make a friend.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were just in a place where spiritually, looking back on it, the evidence was that we felt our chakras kind of zip up like a zipper, like this was a pre-set thing that was happening, and we were just locked into each other and on the same path, and we have the same interests. And so we said, well, looks like we need to work with this. And we had some guidance from apparently off-planet people speaking through a woman that we were working with. And at one point we asked through her to those folks, how can we best be of service to this planet in its time of need? And the answer came back, we need publishers. And we said, well, there's plenty of publishers out there. What's wrong with them? And they said, well, you know, the truth is not coming out. We need someone to bring out the truth. Well, what would we know? We don't know anything. What would we know to publish? And they said, we will send it to you.
And they have.
One after the other after the other. I mean, it's just in a bizarre situation. A typical kind of thing would be that we would be at some conference, say, on UFOs or crop circles or something, and somebody will come up and kind of furtively look around and say, hey, aliens told me you're going to be here and you're going to do my book, and here it is.
I'm not exactly in those words.
I'm exaggerating, but, you know, there are a lot of stories along that line, and we wound up doing most of those projects.
I think that is incredible, and that doesn't sound weird to me.
And what does that say about you, Lori?
I don't know.
We're the normal ones. That's what it says.
Well,
weird is a new normal. That's us. Yeah.
But put it this way. I mean, I think a lot of things, like think about all of the cool cartoons when you're younger, Scooby-Doo or Nancy Drew, you know, as far as books or different things like that. They're all about the mysteries and the things that
right.
people know are there but cannot explain. And a lot of times you just can't prove it unless, you know, you're just this credible person or you have this way of explaining yourself or bringing forth information that allows this credibility that maybe others, you know, they can be enlightened by it. So some people are gifted in a lot of ways. And if one of your gifts were to be able to publish and find these stories, write these stories, or whatever you do as far as the rest of the stories that I'm not aware of all the way, but I plan to be, it's just one of your gifts. And so, you know, everybody's got a mission and a purpose for being
mm-hmm.
here.
Right.
So I think that's great. So what was your very...
to be on the radio.
And your listeners, each of them has a purpose too, a very important purpose. We're all pieces of the same puzzle.
Exactly.
And if they're listening, they are part of this.
And if they're listening, you're right, they're a part of this. And they also, they have a curiosity that's real and a need.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's great that, you know, you guys are here trying to fulfill part of that. So thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so what are one of the very first books? I know I still want to get into this book, okay? But I'm just trying to get this foundation of who you are and how this has come about. Because like yourselves, I do believe that there are no accidents. I believe that everything has a plan, and I think we're all a part of a greater plan. And so you guys getting together and the way you guys felt when you met and everything else, I truly believe in all of that. I mean, so what are one of the very first projects that you guys did together once you got together?
Well, one interesting one that we're still working on today, many years later, was a young woman who came to us with that same kind of story. And she told a story to us that we found remarkable, where she had what she thought was a dream, and she... in this dream was in some big amphitheater kind of thing, and there were some senior, I don't know, off-planet folks down in the center explaining the true history of the planet Earth and all kinds of odd things. And she was supposed to be there to be educated, and she looked across the amphitheater and she saw a friend of hers from New York that she recognized by his face. And she got a lot of good information about, you know, through this dream, and so she was talking to us. And then the strange thing was that this fellow got in touch with us with the same story, only he saw her across the amphitheater.
How incredible.
And so we said, well, that's something. You know, we can't prove or disprove anything about this, but that certainly is interesting, as a shared dream at least.
Oh, I think that's so cool.
Information with someone and so on. So we started working with her, and it was just like turning on a fire hose, and the information came through her. And we started working with her, and the first book was Voyagers 1, The Secrets of a Mentee, and then after that, Voyagers 2, and that one has been, and it's like 600 pages long, and it's full of all this information about the true history of Mother Earth, and all the things that have gone on that we are not told about, and on and on and on and on and on. And as far as we're concerned, we're basically observers here, and if she's making all this up, she's really good, you know, because it's all internally consistent. If she says one thing one place and refers to it 300 pages later, it's identical. You know, it's like at least it's coherent. So
exactly.
That's one. That's the Voyagers projects, and she's gone on. She has a big following, calls itself the Azurite Press now.
Oh, my goodness. I think that's so incredible. And, I mean, what a coincidence. I mean, and not, right? Because, like I said, there's no coincidences, in my opinion. But, I mean, for them to both see each other, both go to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is just, that's supposed to, I think, in my eyes, one thing is to validate her through you, right? Just think about that. She comes to you maybe to prove or to give you some proof. Because you want to trust everything this woman's bringing forth to you. Here comes this other guy to second what she says. You know what I mean? I think that's really cool. I mean, that's a validation. That's like some sort of thing for you guys to tangibly have.
Right. Exactly.
And it meant something for us. You know, we could feel very strong about the information. We could not go further and say, well, this is absolutely true.
Right.
And she's a human being. And she will have her own emotions and histories and things. She'll make mistakes. I mean, all humans do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can't say this is the new Bible. It's 100% correct.
No.
But it certainly seems like there's a lot of truth in it.
And it's a person's, like, account of what they feel, their interpretation of what they feel happened. You know, like you said, if she's recalling a dream, there could be a lot that was blocked out of her. There could be, you know, different things that maybe were changed on her. I mean, they can interject different memories, or there could be just different things that happen that would make this inaccurate or this accurate or whatever. But the thing is, it's her interpretation. All three of us could be in the same room and see the same thing happen, and each of us have a different perception of what we saw.
Oh, absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we come back, we're actually going to be going to a break right now at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, let's talk about your common sense in uncommon times.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Everybody stay tuned for The Dirt, and we'll be right back.
You are tuned to The Dirt. You're tuned to The Dirt. Get interactive with Lori by contacting her blog at lorischulz.blogspot.com. Here comes your diva of the dark, Lori Schulz.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into The Dirt. I'm really excited about this interview that we've got going on with Brian Chrissy and Pamela Meyer Chrissy. We are going to be talking about their new book, Common Sense in Uncommon Times. And if you have any interest in calling in and speaking with my guests, the number is 530-742-5555. So we welcome callers, so please feel free to call in if you have any questions or comments. And so, Brian and Pamela, are you here with me?
Yep,
we are here.
Okay, awesome. So is there anything you'd like to just say before I get into, like, some question on the book? Is there anything you'd like to kind of explain about the book to the listeners?
Well, I was just, while we were on the break, I was telling Brian it's interesting that we did publish this book, because most of our books, we have two imprints. Wildflower Press does all the UFO and ETs and that kind of thing, and then Swan Raven does the ancient cultures, which the philosophies in both are very similar. And then we were just really led to do this book, and I think it gets back to this feeling that many people have who have been linked to spirituality or other life on other planets, that something's going to happen here. We need to be prepared. So it's interesting how this this came about, because we're not survivalists, you know. We're not out there storing food or guns or anything else for this war. We just feel that common sense. Just do a little preparation for whatever might happen. You know, whatever comes that we don't even foresee, and let alone the hurricanes and the tornadoes and the bad storms and anything that we really can foresee that is guaranteed to happen.
That's true. And the other thing is, too, I think a lot of people, when they're getting prepared, their one really important aspect of preparation, I believe, is within yourself, your spirituality, what it is, your belief in who you are, that's going to make you not fearful of anything.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just knowing that certain things are just destined to happen, and they need to happen in order for the greater outcome of all things. So,
right.
You know, it's like, be prepared, because, you know, obviously we're here in the form that we're here for a reason. We are meant to care about the physical things and the physical aspects of being here. But there is this other side of us that we have to have some faith in, you know. So
that's right. You're so right on that.
And that's why we did not want to go into fear with this book. It just did not feel right to do that, because it's exactly what you just said.
Right. Because then it's almost taking, like, your core belief system of, like, who you are and what you are, and turning it into back into, but I feel more like this, you know? So let's just say some of the things that you mentioned in your book. I was just curious of, why do you say that the weird is the new normal? And we were just already talking about that, because, you know, I was like, no, it's normal.
Well,
I mean, look at the Philippines just right now.
Is there anything more we need to say? I mean, look at the Philippines. I mean, you know.
The largest storm ever to hit the planet. It's just mind-boggling.
There are waves higher than trees passing over those islands. And the average elevation there is 10 feet, and some of these waves were 50 feet tall.
So scary.
The winds were higher than anything ever recorded. The barometric pressure was the lowest ever recorded.
And I guess the way we feel is that, you know, we're going through a change. Mother Earth's going through a change.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what she's going to throw at us. But it's exactly what you said, Lori. I mean, we need to change from within us. And as we change from within us, we actually change her as well, and we work together. So I think it's just really important we prepare, we don't get scared, but you also, exactly what you said, you do the internal work.
Yes. I mean, without the internal, the external doesn't even really exist.
Right.
Not in the reality that it really is.
That's right.
You know, if you look at something and you can't see it for what it is, then, I mean, you're not going to see it. You're just blinded. So it's not going to matter what's going on outside if you don't know what's going on inside, you know?
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, this is a very mature attitude that you have, and we're really pleased to hear you say that.
Because
so many people are not there yet.
Well, thank you. And, you know, and I'm hoping to help people understand, like, I feel like it's a mature attitude, but, like, the information that you all share and hold and different things like that, this is one reason I totally embrace and totally enjoy having this show. If it can help even one person even believe in an experience that they've had. Like, look at the lady that you interviewed that had that dream. Okay, and then the gentleman who came forward and had the dream. Let's just say, if she didn't believe in herself enough to realize these aren't actually dreams. Do you see what I mean?
Right.
Like, we just don't understand ourselves enough to realize that a lot of people could be getting messages and could be, trying to be contacted in one way or another, or be used for the greater good, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, and if anybody can start believing in themselves, listening to other people say the same things, my job's... a fun job.
We were told too often when we're kids that that's only your imagination.
I know.
Or even that if that is a dream. Maybe not.
Well,
it's interesting in later years to see the quantum theory come into this, where your imagination, your observation, your presence actually affects reality.
Yeah.
You know, we are involved in the process. We can no longer exclude the observer from the process. And science has come back to the reality of spirituality and manifestation. They don't use those words, but that's what quantum theory is all about.
I think it's just phenomenal that it's like the more that science or different people try to prove that all of this isn't real, the more they prove it is. Like, yeah. it's just great. And it's funny to me too, like, you know, we've got astronauts and we've got all these people trying to leave our planet, right? Well, why would they think of leaving it if they didn't think that they could go somewhere else, just like something coming here?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You
right.
Know,
yeah, exactly.
It's logical, mm-hmm. but it's just, I think it's fear. And, you know, okay, so let's see.
It's also more than fear. It's a type of fear, but a lot of people who are really heavy into the scientific understanding of reality really would not like to know that we are not God's pinnacle of creation for all time in the universe, and maybe the only living thing in the universe. We are likely to be a small pawn in the game. And that's a big step down from where we like to think that we are. You know, we've traditionally thought of humans as being the top of everything, the evolutionary endpoint of a system that eventually delivered humanity to the universe and the one place where life is.
Well, the thing is, like, a part of that maybe possibly could stem from the knowing that we are one of all things, and all things are within us. We're a part right. of everything. So that tendency to feel this greatness, there is some truth behind it. There's truth behind feeling like you are all, and mm-hmm. all is you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I think Brian was referring to when people think they are above it all, like when he was talking, I was thinking about how we think we can control the earth.
True.
Yeah, that's part of the problems we're getting into. We have to really understand that, no, it is all one. We are all a part of this. And if we don't take care of it all, we're going to go through things like we are now.
Yeah, exactly. And I always laugh when people say, oh, we're going to ruin earth. We're ruining earth. I'm like, no. If we become a problem, Earth will ruin us.
Right.
And look what she just did in the Philippines. Oh.
Yeah.
She's going to do what she has to do, and that's the basis of this book.
Earth will do what you can. Earth will be fine without us.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. We're the ones that won't be fine without the Earth.
That's so true. So we have to find a way to be able to be a part of everything.
Absolutely.
Right.
And the other thing, too, you know, I am a Christian. And I do feel like there were so many truths in the Bible. Like, it does not say in the Bible that there are no other lives on other planets, that there's no,
right.
It doesn't say that. And that, for me, when other people think, they might want to say, well, Lori, if you're a Christian, how can you believe this or that? Well, you know, the Bible, people interpret different things differently in
mm-hmm.
the Bible. And the thing is, nobody can tell me what I feel I am. And yet I'm not limited to, like, certain things that I may not understand in the Bible. It could be explaining things that we're yet to know. So to me, it's like, you know, their interpretation, my interpretation, I know how I feel. And it's like, the point is like, there are things in the Bible that tell us about all of this. I mean, it talked about giants. I mean, look at David and Goliath.
Yeah.
Oh, but nobody seems to worry about that. There's skeletons that they're now digging up, and ooh, where did these come from? Well,
right,
it was mentioned in the Bible, folks.
And things that fly in the sky is mentioned quite a bit in the Bible.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Too many people want to throw it out, but there's a lot in there.
There is a little verse in the Bible. I'm not enough of a biblical scholar to tell you which book and verse it is, but
mm-hmm.
if you start looking for these things, you find them. And the phrase that comes up there is something like it just refers to the heavens and all those who dwell therein.
Exactly.
Excuse me?
Yes.
What did you just say?
Exactly. Heavens.
I mean, you go right on to the next verse. You know, there's so many things. And like in Genesis, you know, where Adam and Eve and all that, and then their sons go out and find wives. Excuse me?
Yes.
Who made the wives, you know?
Yes. And so much more, like just all of it, like when they're talking about a star and someone coming down from the skies and just all the different things that are put into the Bible that people are not listening to, like with an open-mindedness enough to hear it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think there's so many things too. Like I could go on with some of that, I know it would be amazing. So, now I'm going to get back to your book, The Common Sense in Uncommon Times. What are the four most common personal emergency situations people may find themselves in? In your opinion,
what we did there, the reason we came up with those was that there are so many different ways that disasters can come that it's kind of pointless to say, well, I'm only going to prepare for this kind of disaster. Let's say you're living in semi-arid Colorado and you say, well, forest fires are the only thing of danger here, so I'm going to just prepare for forest fires. And then all of a sudden you got biblical floods.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what kind of disaster is coming. The people on the Philippines, you know, they had storms. They never saw that sort of thing before. But
it may be simple, like your car gets stuck. You run out of gas in a snowbank. You know, it could be simple things.
Right.
So we thought that it'd be a better approach to just say, well, what kind of a situation might we be in when a disaster of indeterminate nature finds us? And it seems that there's like four situations. One is that you're alone and you're not in a vehicle. And another one is that you're alone but you're in a vehicle. Third one is that you're at home and you have to stay there because the air is poisonous outside. And the fourth one is you're at home, but all of a sudden you've got 20 minutes to get out and the forest fire is coming or whatever. I mean, those are four different situations.
True.
Doesn't matter what's causing them. But we thought in each case it'd be better to approach that and just say, well, here's what you can do in each of these situations. Take a few steps in that direction and you'll be able to be responsive to the kinds of emergencies that can happen.
I agree. Now, I never really thought of it broken down into those four scenarios before, and I think that's really intelligent. It's like it wouldn't really matter why you're trapped in your home, but here are some of the things that you would need, right?
No, I mean, it could be a snowstorm or an ice storm or somebody hit the telephone pole down the road.
Exactly. And then, like, the same scenario goes if you can't get to your home or you need to get out of it, like you were saying, like you only have this much time to get out. So what is it that you need to just grab to take with yourself in order to survive or to get out there? I think those are great ways to break it down.
Yeah, we felt it was easy.
So we thought the simplest thing was what we call a pocket set, and that's just put a little thought into what you carry with you all the time. Like if you're a woman in your purse, if you're a man with on your keychain. Remember the movie Castaway? Mm-hmm. What would Tom Hanks and his character have given for a pocket knife, for example?
Or matches.
I mean, it may be just you and what you've got in your pocket. So think about it. You might want to find a small multi-purpose tool that you could carry along with you that would allow you to do a few things. You might want to make sure that you carry a handkerchief or a bandana so that you can cover your face if you need to keep dust or poison gas or something else.
Or use it as a tourniquet.
And
also a compass. A lot of us look at what we rely on. We rely on our cell phone. If cell phone towers go down, guess what? You're not going to have your GPS.
Right.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we talk about using this book, which is in printed form. There's appendices in the back, and there's a place back there where you can make your own notes and write down things. And one of the things that we suggest that people do is to coordinate with their own loved ones that they would really want to assemble with if ever such a disaster were to encounter them. And just say, well, okay, we all live in this town or this area. What if there's something coming from the east and we've got to go west? Where are we going to meet? Well, how about Elmer's store? Okay. Well, what if we have to go north? And what about south? What about east? Find some places, write them down, and know where you're going to assemble.
And that makes people feel secure, too, because if there's absolutely no way of communicating, you know you already set this up.
I agree with you so much, and it's so funny because our family actually had this conversation, and I don't remember what it was, like whatever event happened within the last few years where we decided to, make this event, you know, or decide where we would meet. And the thing is, I think that's smart, but the only thing that we didn't do that now I'm glad that you pointed this out, we picked one spot. And mm-hmm. you're right, there could be a reason mm-hmm. why we won't be able to get there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
right, and then you're afraid.
We recommend that when you identify those, that you identify one as probably the default one, because if there's no reason to go in any particular direction, you want to know which one you're going to go to.
True.
Right.
And also, what about, like, water purification tablets? Like, what if you have to drink out of a creek or something?
That's right. I mean, they're widely available. There's recommendations in the book about that. There's even some new innovations. There's a SteriPim that people are looking at. It's about $70. It's a little ultraviolet pin thing. Runs on batteries, and it can sterilize a liter of water a good number of times.
Wow, that's
but
cool.
You have to be a little careful with it because it's a germ killer, but it doesn't remove things like radiation and heavy metals and pollutants and things like that.
Okay.
And you also have to filter the water. It has to be clear before you use it. But there are ways in the book to do simple filtering of water. We always recommend that ultimately, if you really want to be sure about your water, that you distill it, because that's the one thing that will take everything out and leave all that behind. And there's a easy way shown in the book where you could take, if you have a campfire or something, some source of heat, find an old pot with a lid that you can turn upside down, put some water in there, and put a little cup in the middle of the pot and heat it up, and the water evaporates, condenses on the inside of the pot lid and drips into the little cup, and periodically you take it out and let that cool, and that's your distilled water, and it's an easy thing.
Wow, that is so cool, and it's in this book?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so amazing. See, you guys have to get this book. Because, I mean, these are great tips, because these are little things that somebody can do to make themselves feel secure and ready. And it would make a difference. Imagine it trying to think of these things if you're quickly trying to leave your house. Once you leave your house, where are you going to find a multi-purpose tool? Maybe the neighbor's shed. I don't know if you're running past it. But, I mean, these are important things.
Should be in your pocket.
Yep, should be in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. We've heard of so many people who have to leave because of a fire, whether mm-hmm. it's in their own home or a forest fire coming. And you do not have a lot of time.
No.
Most of the time, you don't have a lot of time. And that's when we suggest that people have a portable stash where they have some stored water in there, they have some food, they have some extra clothes, they have copies of important papers, like insurance papers and bank information, and they can already have that copied and in a bag in the freezer or somewhere safe. And all of that's in a portable stash that you can grab and put in the back of the car, and you're gone.
Yeah.
It's all maybe favorite pictures, so you really don't have to think about it, because 15 minutes is not a long time to run around the house and try to be prepared.
We suggest also that if people have a vehicle, that they get into the habit of pointing it in the direction of escape and keeping the gas tank as full as possible, so that if you're in such a thing, now is not the time to try to back out into busy traffic. You just want to bug out and go.
That's true.
And get ahead of the crowd and get out, because it'll only get worse.
You could even have like a spare like gas can in your trunk.
That's a personal decision that you have to make, because if you get rear-ended, that's not as nice as if you didn't have the
gas
can.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you might be that person that gets a little further than the rest. I mean, if we all start out with one tank of gas, we're all going to end around the same spot.
Right.
Just, take it and put it in there. You will go farther with it.
You can start your fire at night.
It's not something I'd say you ought to keep in there all the time.
Yeah. And you can start a fire with it. You could, there's some benefits. Maybe if you had a really safe one and you found a really safe spot to put it, as safe as you could. You know, you just never know. I mean, it's a thought.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a consideration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what about, what should people be aware of while attending, like, public events?
Well, I think these days you have to be just more and more aware. When you were coming, when we were waiting for you to come on the line, and they were talking about what happened out in the airport, just really have to be aware. Unfortunately, That's just the way of the world right now. Anything odd, watch out for. That's the weird of the new normal.
We learned from the Boston bombings that it is advisable to stay away from metal mailboxes and dumpsters that are made out of metal and anything, any container like that that someone could put an explosive in and just throw a lot of shrapnel in your direction. It's a sad thing that we have to think like that.
Mm-hmm.
But just stay away from things like that that could be dangerously explosive if something was inside there. And just stay away. Stay more out in the open. Be aware of the calendar dates, because some of these folks that like to make noise like to do it on days that are special for them or for the country, you know, Veterans Day, you know, coming up Monday.
Mm-hmm.
A time to be a little bit extra alert, because some people hate veterans and want to hurt veterans and want to hurt the military and hurt the country, and so on. This would be a day.
That's true.
You know, just be alert. You know, just don't take anything for granted.
And trust
one area
that inner
where
voice.
Trusting yourself. You know, if something feels strange, or somebody feels strange, you know, trust yourself.
Yes.
And we have to get out of that that trap that comes out of the ghetto thinking and so on, like you don't want to be a snitch.
Right.
You know, get over that. You know, if you see something, say something. You know, it's in the highest and best interest of everybody that is there. If you see something unusual, say something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Bring some attention to it.
Because somebody walking in an airport with a rifle might have an odd demeanor.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, you do have to pay attention to what you see. Because if you don't, then that responsibility of you being the one who witnessed that, you just lost your responsibility. Because,
right.
you know, mm-hmm. everybody is responsible for what they see and know. Whether you want mm-hmm. to be involved or not, if you are right there, it's on you. It just is. And you can't ignore it.
Right.
It's an interesting little coincidence that the man who died, the TSA agent who died in that last incident at LAX, his particular job was to watch for unusual behavior.
Yeah, that was weird.
That's very strange.
That was what he was trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's sad. That whole thing is sad.
Yeah.
So, how many minutes do we have, Chris, before we go? We've got 5 minutes. So I just want to be sure that I keep track of this before we get into things. What is the triangle of safety?
Okay. This is something that came out of observing where the survivors were when they were pulled out of the rubble for whatever reason. Was it an earthquake or a bomb or something? But people who sometimes survive these things are found in triangular areas that are triangular in cross-section. The reason that they exist is that the buildings that fall down on people typically are made out of struts and long, strong things like beams and flat walls and things like this. And when they fall down, they typically don't pancake on the floor and smash everything underneath it. Underneath, what they typically do is one end will lodge on something that is strong enough to hold it, and you will create a little cavity underneath there. And so, if you're in a building where that seems to be falling down and you don't have time to get out, again, if you're following our advice and you're just always alert, you will already have noticed where there might be something that could create a triangle of safety, and you head right for it. And lie on the ground right next to it. And when things fall down, if they do, you got a good chance of not being squashed.
That's
very
true.
That's what the triangle safety is. Yeah.
And it could be in your own home, you know, at the lie down next to a sofa or your bed or a chest freezer. Especially, you know, if you live around big trees that could fall on your house. I mean, it's just a good thing to know that you don't get under anything.
Mm-hmm.
You get beside something.
It makes total sense. I mean, that is something that it is common sense. But honestly, until you just explained it to me, I don't know that I would have, in a panic situation, ran to like a beam. I don't know if I wouldn't have just been like, oh, no, there's that door, you know, 500 feet away, or this beam that's, you know, 5 feet away. and I only have a few seconds.
Running for the beams, you're running for something that would support one end of a beam.
Right.
You know, like something strong that the if the roof fell down, it would lodge on that. You get next to that and lie down.
Okay, I see. But either way, I don't think I would have looked for that.
Most people want to go under something,
yeah.
And that's the worst thing you can do. Like if you're lying in your bed at night and you hear a tree coming down, you know, go roll down on the floor. Because the tree is very likely to not hit the, you know, something's going to be, you're going to be in that triangle between the side of the bed and the floor.
And
you will be lying there.
Now, the other thing
about trusting yourself, you know, I've heard so many people who get a voice in their head that says, move out of the way. And they move out of the way and a tree falls down there.
Or they don't get on an airplane. They don't get on an airplane.
Exactly.
And, like, look at how, I mean, how great is that, that those people who had their ticket, they're in line, they just went through all of this stuff to get onto this airplane. Mm-hmm. And they literally trust their inner voice so much or whatever they're feeling that they, that $500 ticket or whatever it costs, that they're willing to just go, you know what? I'm not willing to get on this plane, and I don't know why. And then all of a sudden, there's the plane crashes or whatever happens, and they're like, wow.
Yeah, it's so important that people learn how to observe that silent voice inside and hear it.
And trust it.
You know, and if the plane gets there okay, it was still all right.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe there was a different reason. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
It may not have been the plane crashing. Maybe it was you getting in the cab as soon as you got off there.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't
know.
Something
else is going to happen, yeah.
And so the smoke alarms, let's see, what aren't the most common smoke alarms, the safest for children?
Yeah, the safest one actually for children is a new one. It's more expensive, but you actually record the mother or father's voice in the smoke alarm itself, and
that's so cool.
The parent usually is saying, you know, Freddie, get up now, get up now. And the children wake up within 10, 15 seconds, where the other ones, the photoelectric or the ionizing, children can sleep right through them.
Right through them. That's incredible.
Turn it off. I mean, how many beeps do you hear? I mean, how many car alarms go off in your neighborhood?
Well, I can tell you how many times I hit my snooze in the morning. My fiance would vouch for that. So we are going to be going to a break. We're at the top of the hour. You guys have a few extra minutes, Brian and Pamela. So stay tuned for the dirt, you guys, and we'll be right back with Brian Christie and Pamela Meyer Christie.
Tuned to the dirt.
A large number of perfectly sane and reliable people have been involved in this flying saucer business. We have been collecting material on flying saucer observation, checking, cross-checking, trying to track down leads, no matter how far afield they took us. This tonight is our report. We are going to bring you the facts at hand. What they add up to, well, that's for you to decide. That's up to you.
And now, here comes your diva of the dark, Lori Schulz.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt. Thank you so much for tuning in. We had a great first half of the show, and we will proceed with our second half with Brian Christie and Pamela Meyer Christie. We are discussing their book, Common Sense in Uncommon Times, along with a lot of great, great information and great, we share a lot in common when it comes to, like, our belief system as far as UFOs, you know, life on other planets, just a lot of things. I'd love to have you guys on for the next year. Just steadily. So,
That's a deal.
Welcome back, Ryan and Pamela. So, I hope you had a nice break.
We did.
Okay, great. Before we went to break, we were actually just kind of talking about the smoke alarms, and there are these new ones that you were explaining where you can actually make a recording because of the speed of the kids waking up versus the typical smoke detector just making some racket in the background. And you can record the parent's voice actually waking up the child. And you were just saying that the stats or whatever they did, it showed that they responded quicker?
Yeah, much quicker. That they will actually, the kids will sleep through an irregular smoke alarm going off, which to us is, I don't see how that's possible, but
they just tune it out.
Yeah. They're deep, deep sleepers. They sleep deeper than we do.
Well, and also, like I was saying, you know, I'm a person, and unfortunately for anybody around me, that hits the snooze button for, like, seriously, like 35 minutes. And I can sleep through anybody else's alarm. There's just something that has to do with just, like, a different noise. It's not going to wake me because I know it doesn't have anything to do with me. And so maybe that's the way kids think. And, like, when I'm sleeping, I can convince myself of anything. Like, I could convince myself that noise I'm hearing is just a part of my dream. And so,
right.
But somebody literally talking to me will wake me right up.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So it could be a thing like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These smoke alarms are more expensive, but compared to losing your kids, you know, it's not an issue.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and yeah, like you're saying, they're a little bit more expensive, but hey. And especially like little kids. I mean, they might not be prepared. I mean, I guess you could have like some faux drills or something like that to get them used to what that sound is and what it's there for. But literally, I mean, I don't think a lot of people even explain that to a kid.
Mm-mm.
If you hear this going off, that means there could be a fire. So check into the door. If there's smoke or if you see flames, don't open it. You know, I mean, I don't know how many people literally go through safety things like that with their children. I mean, I don't know that I always did either. And when I look back, I mean, maybe I did. But, I mean, maybe this is also something that could raise some awareness to any of our listeners. You never know who's going to experience a fire or a situation like that. Especially this time of year, people start lighting candles, having fires.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And everything else. So,
you
know, go through. What does that mean?
It's the same principle. You just getting together with the family and talking about it occasionally is all you really need to do.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do? You know, the principle. You know, the door that's hot. The stay down. You know, if there's a hot smoke above you, if there's nasty looking air along the floor, don't get that low. You know,
and don't hide.
Yeah, don't hide.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, just talk about it, and everybody ought to know wherever they're sleeping, where the exit route is that they should take. Because in the event of, say, a fire emergency, it might be all smoky and the lights are out, and you can't be lost.
That's
I mean, you
got to
know which way you're going to go and why.
Yeah, that's so true. And also maybe, you know, a flashlight light next to your kids' beds, you know, power goes out. I mean, there are a lot of things that, I mean, you guys are really raising a lot of awareness and ideas in my head that, you know, a kid's not, sure, some of us, we have candles, but what about your child? Your child's going to be in the dark, scared, not knowing what's going on. Give them a flashlight and, you know, some education, and they're going to be better equipped to keep themselves safe until you get to them.
Right, or they can find you better.
Right. I mean, what if you're hurt?
Yeah.
A lot of kids have saved their parents' lives.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So let's move on to how can someone charge their phone if the power is out?
Well, there's a variety of ways. There are solar chargers which work if the sun is out. There's a device that we talk about in the book that runs on campfires that you can actually build a fire and create enough of a charge to get your cell phone going.
It's like a little tiny camp stove.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, there's ways. Typically what people will try to do is to find some public place that still has power and see if they can use that power. And that's what happened in emergencies like during Sandy and so on. People would go to places that had emergency backup generators and ask them to be able to plug into their power, and often it would happen. But if it's a larger emergency, like the entire grid system going out or something, those are not going to be options.
Right.
And there's no point in charging it if the cell phones or towers are down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but keep it with you just in case they go back on, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, just in case. Let's see. And why is it important to know the approximate wind speed and direction of the wind?
That has to do with the toxic plume that might be coming in your direction if you have an event in your neighborhood, such as a nuclear meltdown at a nuclear power plant or chemical, like in Quebec recently in the middle of the night, that runaway train with toxic chemicals on board. Nobody on board. It picked up speed, came right downtown, derailed, exploded, and suddenly there's this fireball of toxicity hidden maybe your way. So you have to have a little bit of understanding of wind speed and direction and distance. And the short story is that if you can find out which way the wind is going and you see the direction from which the plume is coming and you put your kind of point at the direction of the plume, if the wind and the plume are within a fist of each other, then you've got to get out. It's probably going to come in your direction. And if you have an idea about how quickly the wind is moving, which you can tell from the flags if you see anything like that, or if you have an anemometer or something, but you don't want to spend a lot of time figuring out exactly when the plume is going to get there. I mean, basically, once you figure out you got to get out, you ought to get out right now and just not worry about the exact amount of time that you have. But if you're prepared, like we suggest in the book, okay, just grab your stuff and go.
So true. Yep, and you know, the more we go over these things, they are common sense. But the thing is, it's common sense. It's weird. Like so many people, it's preparedness also, because I mean, these are common sense things. Like people can figure this out for themselves. But a lot of times, if people are panicked, or if they're not prepared, you know, you're not gonna be able to do these things that you were truly capable of doing.
No, that's the whole point, because when you're in a situation like that, you're not going to think as clearly, and it's so much easier to just have it prepared ahead of time. Why take the risk, you know? It just makes your life easier, and I think it just makes you feel a little more secure that I don't have to worry about it.
So true. It's just a few precautions. It's no different than having a spare tire, right?
Exactly, and we were talking about, you know, how to be prepared when you were in public. I mean, it's always a good idea to look for exit signs.
So
now, how will I get out of here if something happens?
Especially when you're in an airport or somewhere huge like that. I mean, places where things go down a lot of times. Or maybe if you're at like some big NFL game or the Super Bowl or somewhere where it might be something that could easily be targeted. Or just what if something happened there? How would you get out? I mean, it takes a couple hours to get out and everybody's in line and not in a hurry.
Right.
Some of the stories where people have died in great numbers, especially in overseas situations, are where people would go to a nightclub or something, and because the owners didn't want anybody slipping in and not paying the ticket, they would lock the doors, and then the group would set off pyrotechnics because that's part of their act, and the place catches on fire, and nobody get out, and so many people die. I mean, just stupid things, you know, happen. If you're in those situations, I would suggest if you observe that the exit door is locked and they're going to do fireworks, here's a good time to go home.
Yeah, exactly. It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the signs of dangerous air?
Well, one thing is dead bodies.
That's a huge sign,
down.
Right?
Sounds awful.
Passing
yeah,
out.
I mean, really, you know, because some of it is invisible and tasteless and smellless and so on. So you look for that, and if you see that sort of thing, or if you see discolored air, especially heavier gases that are pooling in low areas and things like that, it's a good time to get out. And if there's any possibility that that is a nerve gas or one of those toxic things that might show up in a terrorist attack, it's better not to try to be the hero. I mean, just split. I mean, just get out of there, because the first breath you take trying to help somebody, you're dead too. I mean, you know, those things. If you get signs of bad air, just get out. Grab anybody you can on the way, but don't stay around. It's a death warrant.
Well, because you might be able to better serve helping people if you can get yourself out and figure out what's going on.
You can't help anybody when you're dead, you know?
Yep, nope. What is a safe haven room?
Safe haven room.
That's a room that not everybody has a room that they can set up, but maybe some kind of storage room, a closet, preferably like we have one here that's in the back corner of our house. We live in a daylight basement house, so it doesn't have any windows, and a place where you could go if there is bad air, and you can be in there for a few hours or something and seal it off. But it's also another place where you can store things. It's where you can store some food, you can store water, you can store books that will help you figure out things, how to do things that are people used to know but we don't know anymore.
Mm-hmm.
How to grow your food, how to fix things. We have a lot of books in our safe haven room that practical little tools. And we talk about storing food, and, you know, there again, some people are storing food for a year. Some people store food for 6 months, but we recommend at least, you know, having some food that would get you for about 10, 15 days on something that common would happen, like an ice storm or something, where your electric might be out.
Mm-hmm.
That's a practical thing that most people can do, because you can go and you can get 2-for-1 items and use one and put one in your storeroom, and gradually you'll be surprised how much you that builds up for you.
I mean, a lot of people, if
you don't have a disaster, then just use the food and rotate it out.
Yeah. A lot of people already have, like, pantries. It's like, just be a little strategic with some of your shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people already buy way more than they use. You might as well make some of it just stuff that can last for a while.
Right.
And that
mm-hmm.
you can just place somewhere else. Rotate it out, you know, after a few months
right.
if you need to. But it's like mm-hmm. if you put, like, certain foods, like maybe some of your canned goods or dried foods, just I think that's so wise. That's a great idea. And
mm-hmm.
do you store a certain amount, like you're saying, 15 days worth of water? Or do you do a little bit more than that because of needing to wash or I don't know.
Well, we store a lot of water here because we have a well.
Okay.
And if the electric goes out, our water goes out. We have a generator for the well, but it may only be a couple hours, and you don't really want to run the generator. And it's amazing how many gallons of water you can go through. So, yeah, that's one thing. We have water. We like little squirrels putting away nuts. We have water all over the place.
I think that's really smart. I mean, that's going to be our liquid gold, right?
It's going to be. Mm-hmm. It is liquid gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the first thing, other than not being able to breathe, that will kill you.
Exactly.
Lack of water.
Yeah.
You dehydrate a lot sooner than you'll starve.
Well, speaking of breathing, I mean, do you have, like, sort of any sort of masks or anything like that? I mean,
well, what we recommend that people do is you can just go to the hardware store, the Lowe's or Home Depot or something, get some of these little dust masks that E95 type masks that get most of the particulates out of the air. It's about as much as is worthy of doing. Because if you say, well, I'm going to have a gas mask for every type of toxin that could come, well, there's not going to be any room for anything else in your safe room.
True.
Because you've got to have 35 different gas masks, and you've got to know which one to put on, and it's just not worth thinking about.
No.
You just want to protect yourself as well as you can with a dust mask or a bandana that is wet, something like that. It'll do as good as you can do in most cases.
So
don't worry about it too much.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see. If the water would get turned off, let's say, in my house and I didn't store any, what could I do?
There's a lot of water that's in your house in places that you don't normally think. And one is if you have the standard toilets, the tanks in the back of the toilets, that's drinking water in there prior to it being mixed into the bowl and getting contaminated. So that water can be dipped out and used. There's water implicit in the ice cubes in your freezer. There is water in the pipes in your house or building. And if you wanted to make use of that, the best thing to do, if you have containers, and you should, is you go to the topmost part of your building and you open up a spigot. This is when there's no pressure in the water lines anymore. And then you go to the lowest point and open up another spigot there, and that's where you have the container, and you'll drain out many, many gallons of water typically out of the house.
That is such great advice.
It's good. It's just stored. You know, it's inadvertent storage.
Wow. And what about finding water in nature? Let's say I had to leave my house.
Well, the best thing to look for is anything green. You know? Mm-hmm.
Low spots.
Water
always goes to the lowest level.
Anything green growing someplace means it's getting water. So that's where you go, and if you have to dig deep enough to begin getting moisture there, and if all you're getting is dampness, we explain in the book how you can do some simple distillation techniques with just a plastic sheet to and a container to drip into. It's fairly simple.
Wow, I think that's so interesting because, you know, when you're out in nature and everything else, the thing I would be kind of worried about is, like, bacteria or am I drinking mm-hmm. something that's going to hurt me?
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I guess if you had the purification tablets and you know, I don't know, would you really need them if you do that kind of, like, draining it out, like you're saying, with those techniques?
If you distill it, you don't really need anything else. But if you are trying to drink surface water or collected water in some other way, you do have to be concerned about these things. And we talked about the stiripen,
yes.
and other kinds of things like that, and the pills that you can put in there that give it kind of a bad taste that kills most things, but at least the germs, the Giardia, and diseases and things like that.
I would love to see Pamela's purse. I wish I had it right here on this table right now. I would be digging. I just have a feeling it's the coolest purse. So if I was stranded on the side of the road and I didn't have cell service, what would you recommend?
Well, it depends on what time of year it is and where you live.
Okay. Let's say it's winter.
Yeah, if it's winter, all recommendations say do not leave the car. And that's when, you know, our little advice about having a go pack, which is a little backpack with some dried food, some change of clothes, a space blanket, some water, maybe a hand crank radio. I mean, you'd have that with you that would keep you company, a book, our book. You just don't leave the car, and you run the car maybe every 15 minutes for about 5 minutes to warm yourself up. But if you have a few things in the car, which I would guess most people in very cold climates, I would hope they would carry things with them. But the only time to get out of a car in the winter is if you absolutely, positively know where you are.
That's not
to get to the place of safety.
Now, if it's summertime and you do know where you are and you're stranded in the road and your cell phone doesn't work, you know, you could get out and walk if you know where you are. But it's really best to stay put.
Because mm-hmm. a vehicle can be seen by helicopters and so on a lot
yeah.
more easily than an individual.
That's so true.
Hidden under woods and things.
And it gives you
yeah.
safety.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It really yeah. could because, I mean, like, let's say from animals or other people, you can lock the door. I mean, like, literally, it could be, like, your safe room.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, it really could
mm-hmm.
be. And if you're carrying extra things in there, it could be, you know, you're fine.
That's
there was
so
a
true.
Story recently that you may have seen. There was a young couple, I think there was a child involved, too, and they were in the Yellowstone area. And either they...
No, it was just a couple.
It was a couple?
Yeah.
They didn't see or it wasn't posted that the road was closed, and they went into a snow area, and they just kept going until the snow was too deep and their tires spun, and they were out there 4 days. But they did this. They stayed with the car.
Mm-hmm.
They ran the engine a little bit, 15 minutes an hour or something like that, just to stave off the cold. And they were able to survive. They had some water with them.
That's really cool because I heard of a couple. And I don't remember if it was, and Chris might be familiar with this too. I think it was in California in the snow area somewhere where a couple went in and they were going down some off road in the winter. They got stuck. He went to go get help and, I think he froze or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Right, I remember
yeah.
that.
Yeah. yeah. And it's like the opposite. It's like the preparedness versus not. I mean, and the common sense part of it. And, you know, if somebody's listening and knows this call, I'm so sorry. Like, it's so tragic. And nobody is like, oh, you should have. Nobody thinks like that at that time. Like, nobody's thinking that. But to yeah. avoid that situation, I mean, better to understand the situation you're in, keep a clear head, and go, yeah, I don't like being trapped in this car, but guess what? I'm stuck.
It's better.
I'm
yeah,
X amount of miles away. Is this reasonable travel for me? No.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and that's why we really recommend that people put together a little go pack. And we have a whole list of things to put in there, and it's not difficult to do, and you can do it. You can go to the thrift stores and pick things up, and then you have that in the car. You just have to grab it, and you have food, clothing, water, things to keep you warm. It's just such a simple thing that can really... And if you don't have an accident, we've used ours on picnics.
when we've needed tools or something.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden you're like, hey, wait, I have that. Hold on. Yeah. It's in my pack.
Right.
Like, right. In fact, the other week we used it when we had to go to Charlotte to the airport, and it was very nice here. And when we got over there, I was going to take a jacket, and I forgot because it was so warm. And then we got over there, and it was raining, and it was cold, and we didn't have jackets, and we went in the go-pack, and we pulled clothing out.
Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, and there's just so many things that you could plan ahead for. Even those, like, you know how you break them, and it's like you put them in your mittens or your, you know, hold them in your
hand warmers and foot warmers, mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, I know they don't last forever, but it's like, hey, it's something.
Uh-huh.
If you have enough of them, you can at least warm up.
Yeah.
Right.
Psychologically, it's important.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to say one other thing. These stories about people being in their cars out in the snowy areas and stuff. I mean, common sense. Tell somebody where you're going to be, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing.
If you go missing, they know where to go.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people are just like, they just take off. You know what? If you just simple text, hey, guys, you know, hope you guys have a great day. We're heading up to whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
Michigan Bluff. You know,
yeah, right.
Anybody around here knows that's out in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, just let them know. Then all of a sudden, hey, we haven't heard from them for a day or 2 days.
Right.
Wait,
well,
last
going to
I know.
Bluff.
Yeah.
Right.
Shoot. I mean, you could even, like, if you really wanted to really, you know, really go that extra mile. You could seriously have something that you could put on the top of the roof of your car, like a big orange something or another that could be spotted easily, or
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It could
yeah,
be
that's
some,
a good idea.
Or some it sort is. Of thing you spread out that's just like, okay, I'm going to dart out, I'm going to do this, and just leave that.
Mm-hmm. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
So... Well, we are at the bottom of the hour. We're actually going to go to a commercial. When we come back, we'll continue on. This is the most amazing book and it has so much great information. And I think everybody should get this book. I think it would be helpful for anyone. So when we get back from our break, we'll be back with Brian Crissy and Pamela Meyer Crissy.
You are tuned to The Dirt. You are tuned to The Dirt.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. This has been a lot of fun. My special guests tonight, Brian Crissy and Pamela Meyer Crissy, are on the air with me right now, and we are talking about their book, Common Sense in Uncommon Times. And right before break, we were talking about, you know, if you get stranded somewhere in your car, whether it's hot weather versus cold weather, the different types of packs that you could be prepared by having in your car, that would just make a situation, it could turn it into a life or death situation. I mean, having the pack and having some common sense about the situation could literally save your life and some choices that you make versus getting yourself in a compromising position of maybe people not being able to locate you, find you, help you, you know, whatnot. So Brian and Pamela, are you here with me?
We are.
All right, great. Well, I think one of the questions people would have is how could I, you know, be prepared and store some food without having to spend like a fortune on that situation?
Yeah, we touched on that briefly, and that's, we like to purchase the two-for-one sales for storing food. I think it's just really, it's really, really helpful.
Yeah.
And, you know, we like to do organic food and local most of the time, but for stored food, yeah, you're just trying to get by for a short period of time.
What types of foods do you, besides being a two-for-one, what types of foods are you storing personally?
I put canned foods, you know, macaroni and cheese and tuna fish.
Dried beans,
rice, all kinds of dried grains. We have dried fruit that you can store. And, you know, things like that. For the go pack or for your stash, there's a... organization called eFoods. You can get camping foods that are very compact. This is like camping foods. You add water and put it in the pouch and you get food. Those are the kinds of things that are good to put in your portable stash or to put some of these in your go pack that you might have in the car. Jerky, You know, sure. Things like that that are compact and very nourishing.
Yeah, those are good suggestions for sure.
I think Pam touched on the idea that we suggest that people more or less abandon their luxury of how they eat. For example, I'm going to only store gluten-free vegan materials. And when it comes down to life or death, just find food that is going to get you through to the point where you can go back to that luxurious choice of eating better than a lot of people do. But just get what you can. You know, it's important to have food rather than to have the right food.
And what you can afford.
That's true. I mean, think about this, too, like the granola.
Granola is,
you know, I mean, I don't know how long that would last, but I mean, what about this? Just getting oatmeal, dried oatmeal.
Right, exactly.
Raisins, things like that. I mean, that's, you can get a lot of energy out of that. And literally, it's probably better for you than eating some of the fattening foods than we're eating right now while we wait for our disaster.
Right.
You know, we wait to eat right. For a disaster time.
Right.
So if you had to explain how this book differs from a survival book, how would you define the difference?
It's vastly different, actually. It's, you know, a lot of people think of it as like a first aid book. It's not even close to first aid. We suggest you get a first aid book to have in your either go pack or your safe haven room, so helpful to have.
Yeah.
It's not fear-based. It's more practical, the common sense ideas that we keep talking about. It's for things that are inevitable to happen. The electric going out every winter. Going to the Charlotte airport the other day and not having something but being prepared. And we just did not want to go into fear, and I think so many survival books are fear-based.
That's true.
And we didn't want to do that. Plus, we took it into long-term survival. When we were writing this book, we absolutely could not write it without looking at how do we survive long-term, and what are the good things that are happening around that as well, because so many things about our food are bad. Sometimes our medical system leaves a lot to be desired, and GMO corn and BT toxins in our food, all of these things are not good, the environmental things that are going on. But there's the back to local movement that we talk about that is, I just went down to the store down the road today, and it's all a local farm store where I could buy just about all my produce, meat, even kiwis that are grown in our county.
Mm-hmm.
That back to local movement, I think, is so important because our food distribution system, really, we only have 3 days' worth of food in most grocery stores if everybody went in there and pulled out food.
Wow.
So that's, which is another good reason to store some food.
Yeah, that's a great reason.
You don't go into a panic.
Well, think about it, too. Like, if you're in an emergency situation and it came down to it, money is not going to really do anything for you, really. Okay.
No.
The things that are going to be good trade for other things
right.
that you might need to survive, I would say water being number one. If you have water, you're going to have, like, the riches. Like, that is going to be the most important part.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you're going to be looking at food and people who are in need of food. Hey, what could I trade for? You know, weapons, tools.
Tools,
ways to keep warm,
lighters.
Yeah. Yep, yeah.
We had a friend that found a way on the internet, I think, to buy those little airplane liquor bottles, little tiny ones.
Oh yeah.
He got a whole case of those, just for barter.
Yeah.
Because when things are pretty upset out there, a lot of people can find some value in a little bit of that, and it might be that you forgot to store the food, but if somebody has it, you can barter those liquor bottles very easily.
I agree. And it's going to be those little commodities like that, like that somebody is going to be like, wow, yeah, I'll trade that. And those little ones, that's kind of cool. That's a great idea because, I mean, it is tradable for, you know, different sizes. Plus, if you think about this, if everything goes down and your money's all in a bank, okay,
right, exactly.
I think there is obviously going to, when I said money's not going to be any good, well, money in the sense of checks, credit cards, but silver, gold,
right,
precious metals, those are going to be, those are definitely going to be a tradable item.
And right, and we definitely suggest that you keep some money in the house. You know, because there's been times that ATM machines have gone down.
Yeah.
It's good to have some cash around.
Can I ask a question?
Coins are good, small change.
Oh, you know what? All of a sudden we must have piqued Chris's interest. We talked about money.
I just don't think that if it all goes to heck like that, I don't think anyone's going to care about a gold necklace.
True. They might not, but eventually, let's just say things start picking back up or whatever. You're never going to get that electronic money back. But
no, that's true, but I think that it's going to be more in terms of those little mini liquor bottles. If I live in the wilderness, I'm not going to care about a gold coin. That's not going to do anything.
No, you're right. You're right, but I'm talking about the natural transition or whatever.
Okay.
How would you say that? From going from the immediate emergency, obviously it's going to be the transgression, as I was trying to say. From water, your immediate needs, obviously, those are going to have the most value.
Right,
but
right.
Let's just say people start rebuilding. They start doing this or that. All of a sudden, it's going to go back to coins or finding that money or whatever. There's going to be value in that. You can make bullets. You can make things with it. There's going to be a need for
silver bullets for the werewolves when they come.
Exactly, Chris.
No, we have a whole chapter on werewolves.
But you know what I'm saying. So I put it this way: if you have some money and you can you can trade some in for silver or some coins or something that is actually going to be a tangible form of currency, we are in this world. It's a materialistic world, unfortunately. I wish it was just about need, just like how Indians lived off the land. But I'm sorry, people already are the way they are. So eventually, it will turn back into that, and somebody who has those tangible forms of currency are going to be better off than somebody who has, I have this bank card. And as far as I know, when before the systems all failed, I had like $1 million.
When we reinvent computers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
When I can get my funds back.
That's it.
Yeah, no.
And I think we have to remember, too, that King Midas died of starvation.
See?
You know what I'm talking about? Everything
there's
he touched turned to gold.
Yep.
He couldn't eat it.
Yeah, that's true. But eventually, though, right? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Don't carry all that. But I think somebody is going to have a lot of water and not a lot of silver. And they're going to be like, hey, I might need that silver. Yeah, you can have a little of this water for the silver. I'm just saying, it seems to me a tradable, tangible way to have currency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Chris doesn't want any. He just wants water.
Well, if I got the water, I'm not, you know, and all you got is silver.
I agree with you.
Sorry.
But if I'm smart enough to have some silver, I'm going to have some water.
I guess. I mean, you just got to bury the silver and just ride it out and wait for civilization to come
back.
Right.
Dig it out.
We talked to someone who was in Hurricane Andrew, and beer was a really good commodity.
Beer?
Because even after it was over, I mean, it just helped people they gathered together, they had parties, and they had a good time.
Yeah, I live down in South Florida when they went
into volume. There's a lot of storage space.
Yeah. And it dehydrates you.
Well, what about this, too? Like, as far as a painkiller goes, when you're talking about those small bottles of liquor, you could also look at that as a way of disinfecting something. You could look at it as a painkiller. I mean, what if Chris gets shot in the leg and I have to, like, dig out the bullet? Here, Chris, take this little shot of whiskey.
That's right.
And I'm going to dig out that bullet so that your leg doesn't have to get cut off, because then I don't have enough alcohol to give you to cut your leg off.
I think it's sad enough to say painkillers are already a tradable commodity in some places in this country.
Yeah, I know,
true.
I get that, but
that's
what
true.
If you don't have any and you're not going
to
be...
You know, if everything goes to hell, then they're definitely going to be a tradable commodity, those painkillers.
That's true.
Yeah, we definitely recommend that you know, in your first aid kit, you add to it. And
some of the medicines. What are some of the medicines that you recommend?
Well, we recommend homeopathics because they're very small. And they work very well, and you can get them at health food stores. Say, for instance, if you have diarrhea or something, you can take it, and it can pretty much stop it. If you have an allergy,
There's some for allergies. There's some for nerve pains. I mean, they come in all kinds of varieties. And we suggest that you go to the health food store and you look at things that you usually have. Maybe you have migraines or sinus issues or whatever it is for your personal needs. Mm-hmm. And you put those in your first aid kit.
Yeah.
Plus any other medications that you would need. You have to personalize it. You can buy a first aid kit, but you need to personalize it for things that you might happen, headaches.
Somebody who's asthmatic. Let's just
Pardon?
Say
yes,
somebody,
exactly.
You have asthma. I mean, what happens if pharmacies shut down? And here you are, you're out of albuterol.
Right.
You know, I mean, you might want to stock up on a little bit of that, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how much you can. You'd have to check, but I would imagine you could get some doses ahead, especially for an asthmatic.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, with my daughter being that way, like, I could get a couple in advance.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. And we also suggest that if you, once you get, new glasses, you put your old glasses in the go pack or you put it in the storage.
Great idea.
Because if something happens to your new glasses, you can go back to those. They won't be as good, but they're there.
That
better
is
than
such
nothing.
A great
yeah.
idea.
Because some people can't see without their glasses, so it's critical.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it would be hard enough to find your way out of the woods, and then if you can't see on top of it.
Right.
You know, and plus for reading. For reading anything you need to read or any. Oh, my gosh. That is such a great idea. Absolutely. Okay. And let's see. What about our pets? What are some of the things we could do to be prepared for our pets?
That's real personal, too. One of the things we suggest, again, is that you have dog food put away or cat food or whatever food you need for your whatever pets you have, and that's stored in your safe room, wherever you're storing other food, and also in a stash that you're going to take with you, or if you travel with your pets, make sure you have water, bowls, and extra food packed away that you don't have to grab if you only have 15 minutes to get out, and you take that with you. Now, if you're going to be evacuated and there's a forest fire coming and you're not sure you can even come back, the decision whether to take your pets or not is real personal and depends on what the situation is. But most of us want to take our pets. In that last evacuation in Colorado, they were finding out that people won't leave unless they did take their pets.
Aww.
So I think these rescue workers are working around that more. But that can jeopardize other people, too.
Right.
And that's where the decision is. Some pets might be able to fend for themselves okay. And that's a decision that has to be made. And some pets, you know, may not.
Yeah, it's so true. I can see what you're saying. Like, you know, maybe birds, you might want to let them loose. Or I don't really know. I mean,
no.
It's just you wouldn't want to leave them in a burning house. So it's kind of like,
Oh, no.
You would have to make some decisions, and those are kind of good decisions to have made ahead of time.
That's right.
That's the kind of thing you want to talk about before there's an emergency. People have died trying to go back to get their pets.
Yeah.
You got to decide, you know, is my life or the pet's life the most important thing?
Or if you have a plan, is there a way, like, you know, that everything can be incorporated, you know,
right.
into a sufficient plan?
But you have to think, sometimes people have, like, three St. Bernards. I mean, that's a much more difficult evacuation.
Right.
You know?
But you certainly wouldn't leave them in a burning house.
Yeah, no. And not only that, but just think, let's just say you were going to be on foot. I mean, you could pack your dogs and carry it, put some backpacks on them. It's like, there.
Right, exactly.
Together. And then the other thing, too, like, as far as, like, what you're saying with the bowls and different things, if you did find a way or you were bringing your pet, they do have those collapsible bowls for, like, hikers and different, you know, people camping. And that's a perfect thing just to have tucked away for your animal.
Right. We have a little pack that goes on a dog, like you were talking about, and it has two pouches on either side.
Oh, yeah.
And you could have bags of food in there. Strap it on your dog and put them in the car.
Yeah, it could be their food.
They can carry their own food.
Yeah. One side's like a little pouch of water. The other side's their dog food. It's like, there you go. But Let's see. And what about what important papers do you think are necessary to have in your, like, to-go packs or?
Anything you might need to put your life back together.
Okay.
Insurance papers, bank papers, how much money you have in the bank would be good to be able to prove. Probably not how much you owe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
don't
but
bring
they
your
could they could come in and tell you you owe more than you really
their
do.
Responsibility, remember that.
Any of your financial papers that are important. But the other interesting thing that we put a lot of value on is photographs.
Yeah,
because
that's true.
It's really when you see people going around the rubble of their building, they're usually or their home, they're usually looking for photographs.
You know what? It's so true because that's a lot to do with your genealogy, your family tree, just who's who. And, I mean, those are things that you can never, you know,
right.
ever get.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear
okay.
me?
Okay. Yeah, you're kind of fading.
Oh, okay.
I think it's a coronal mass ejection destroying the Earth, so don't worry about it.
Here, can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I was just going to say that I guess a person would have to determine what are those irreplaceable items that they have.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What would you be crushed if you didn't have? And what papers do you need to put your life back together?
And if the person is a little bit technologically adept, they can take advantage of various services to store files out in the cloud and that sort of thing, assuming that civilization returns and you can actually go out and get that later.
Mm-hmm.
But you can scan the important photographs. You can scan the documents that you may need to retrieve and use when you get back out from under the emergency.
That's so true.
And put all that, if not on the cloud, at least put it out on a little thumb drive,
mm-hmm.
and make multiple copies of that, and put one in your backpack, one in your stash, in your safe room, put it in various places. So no matter what happens, you can always go and grab, oh, here they are.
That's
you know,
great.
Somebody's going to have a computer and read it out and start over. I mean, it could be, it just comes down to that.
And what, it only takes, like, it would take some planning to get all this, the initial things that are important to you, but even photos. I mean, you mm-hmm. could scan a bunch of photos. There are different things
yeah.
you could save on there. And then once you've got your file, as you live and as you go along, different things you might want to add to that. And
right.
then, shoot, making a copy of that, it's so easy. You can make
right.
six files,
yeah. right.
like you're saying, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what are I know we're getting close to the end of the hour here, but what are some things that myself or others should coordinate with family before disaster strikes? Do you have any recommendations on that?
Well, I think we've covered them in some
for
ways.
Much?
You know, how to get out
yeah.
of your house, which way to go, what to do in a fire, where to meet.
You might also want to write down the contact numbers for the important people in your loved one group. For example, cell phone numbers, landlines, and so on, because if the cell phone system is down and your battery has gone and you can't get it charged, and all the memory of those numbers is not there.
Sure.
So pencil and paper is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, and write those down at some point so that you can, if you can get to a point where telephones work again in some way, try to contact people using those numbers. So
yeah.
just take care of it. Just collect them and put them in written form and put them in the back of the book, for example. Keep the book in your go pack.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I've noticed having a cell phone has kind of ruined some of my memory. Like, as far
yeah.
I used to have everybody's numbers memorized. I don't know if you guys remember, like, back in the day where
right.
if you didn't memorize that person's number, I'm sorry. You know,
right.
what if you never get it again? You
yeah,
know?
Right.
Chris is keyed into this now.
Well, it's just, you know, you got to take a stop off in the 90s before you can go back to the Stone Age, I guess, properly.
Yeah. yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, really? Like, where? I don't memorize. You know what? Your number comes up. Chris.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I just
mm-hmm.
look under Chris.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's all, what's Chris's number? I'd be all, I have no clue.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The only number I really know really well is the station number because I say it all the time.
Say it all.
Yeah.
Right.
But, mm-hmm. Okay, so what can people do? If people can only do one or two things, what would you recommend?
I think you'd probably want to get your pocket set together. Just get a little multi-purpose tool to put on your key ring,
mm-hmm.
and carry a bandana with you. And that'd be the first and simplest little thing that you could do.
I'd store some food and store some water. Definitely, I would start working on that process. I would also put a go pack together. You know, I just
grab and go.
Yeah, grab and go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think the number one thing everybody can do, if you really want to get yourself completely prepared, is to get yourselves out there and purchase the book Common Sense and Uncommon
Sense. Oh, I agree with that, Lori.
What a good idea.
I think it's a great idea. I don't even know how I came up with that. But and again, the authors, Brian Crissy and Pamela Meyer Crissy. And if you Google them or go on YouTube, you're going to find a lot more information. I mean, this is one book of many, many interesting writings. And this right here, I think this is a great way for people to just get in tact with their common sense and to, you know, get prepared. And I think this is awesome. Is there anything that you guys would like to promote or say to your listeners right now?
I did want to just say that the book is available at Barnes & Noble and, of course, on Amazon.
Okay.
But, yeah, I would just say, you know, do a little preparation and put away some fear.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just we always feel more empowered with just a little bit of preparation.
I agree, and you actually are more empowered with the
Lord. You really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You really are.
So
and maybe there's going to be another day sometime when we can talk about crop circle essences, one of which actually helps you banish fear. So
we'll
talk
right.
about that some other day.
Oh, my goodness. I would love to have you guys back on again. Would you be willing to come back on? Oh, I would love it.
That'd be great.
Thank you, because, I love this book because of all the things going on, you know, and all the natural disasters, all the things happening. And we could actually have a whole show on why we think these things are happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
I mean, mm-hmm. this book is, this is, like you're saying, it's the basis, it's the basics, and it's also the basis to some common sense. And I think it's something that's really, truly valuable. And I really think there's things in here that everybody can use. However, I, of course, can't help but be intrigued on the side where why you came up with this and
right.
all those kind of things that we didn't have time to cover. But
right.
I'm super excited. I definitely will get with you guys and reschedule you to come back on. I really wanted to talk about the crop circles and different things like that. But, I mean, we can only cover what we can cover, right?
Okay.
And this was
okay.
great.
This was very good.
This was great, Lori.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, both of you.
One last thought I wanted to put in there, and that was we would recommend that people give a lot of thought to safety in numbers as opposed to individual survival with weapons or something.
Community.
You know, community, that's the way we have to go.
Okay.
You know?
And I think that's a great suggestion. And do you go over that in your book a lot? Or?
Yeah, there's a whole section on the back.
Yeah, we do talk about community.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, mm-hmm. I just want to say that it has been such a pleasure to have you both on here, and just the creativity, the mindset, and just the spirituality I can sense between you two. It's just awesome. And
mm-hmm.
I just want to say thank you so much for being on The Dirt.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for having us on The Dirt, Lori. We really enjoyed it.
It's been good. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, too. You guys have a great evening, and definitely I'll get you back on here soon. So
okay,
everybody,
take care.
Oh, thank you. You guys, too. Up next, we have Bob Day and The Great American Story. After that, we have Zach and Brian, The Zach and Brian Show. So everybody stay tuned to KMYC 1410 AM because we have some great shows coming up. Stay tuned for The Dirt next week from 5 to 7 p.m.